It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Sal Capaccio joining us on the Western Hotline. Sal, are you? I mean, you don't like when the Yankees lose, but kind of.
Oh, man.
I mean, is there any element of what a scene last night, what a game, your team's involved in it at all? Any of that?
Sure. Here I have, but full disclosure, I was not watching when the end of the game situations all happened. I was at an event.
Okay.
But I was actually following along on my phone. I was actually with Stevie Johnson, and I'm mad at Stevie. I'm mad. Stevie knows I'm mad at him because it's 5-3 with two outs, and he goes, "Oh, they're good. This one's over." I'm like, "Stevie, you can't say that."
Yeah.
And then, sure enough, that happened. And he's like, "Oh, it's my bad." I'm like, "Yeah, that's your bad. You can't say that, man." And then they lost again, and then they lost. So you never do that. You know, it's you can't say it's over till it's over, right? I mean, if you played sports, you've been around sports. From that aspect, I would say it this way, Jeremy. I do have an appreciation for that as a sports fan, but especially because it only made the series 2-1. If the Yankees had lost the series,
yeah,
or if they went down even like 3-1 or 3-2, I would probably sit here going, "No, there's no way. I can't think of it that way." But I think because it just softens the blow and you get a more of a healthy respect for the bigger picture of what you just said. And I did go back, and normally when my team loses like that, I would not watch the highlights or want to relive it. But I had to see. I'm like, that's incredible what happened. I had to go back and watch.
Yeah, a scene. Like, watching that scene is a reminder of why
everybody
watches sports, is to experience those kind of moments for your teams. All right, Sal, well, the Bills are back.
And we all know, like, that real quick, that Cleveland is very similar to Buffalo, right?
Yeah.
The sports fans and, you know, blue-collar, Rust Belt City. And I know they have a championship. Right, with the Cavs, I get it.
But the Guardians,
you know, we've always kind of related.
Right, the Guardians, formerly Indians, have been really close and all the way to Game 7 and not done it. So, yeah, heartbreak for them. Whatever, you feel good about the series, which is good. The Bills are back at home, Sal, for the first time in about a month. Let's do the Barnes Firm injury report first because we've got updates. Most of it is, I think, good news, and we're still tracking a couple different players on the Bills. So the Barnes Firm injury report brought to you by the Barnes Firm. Car crash, for help, call 1-800-8-MILLION.
Yeah, so you heard Joe say it, 16 players on the injury report. That is a lot, and then normally you're like, "Come on, give me a break." But look at all the designations. There's only one DNP, and even that has a vet rest attached to it. Yes, there's a foot injury as well for Daquan Jones, but vet rest slash foot tells me that's, you know, not something to be too concerned about right now. So really, when you think about it, this is as healthy as this team has been since week one, guys. No doubt about it. Healthy as they've been since the preseason. You mentioned it, that James Cook was upgraded to a full participant. There are several guys limited, including Ed Oliver. That's the one we're going to be watching today. And the other one is, I will say, Ray Davis was not on the injury report on Wednesday. He appeared limited on Thursday with a calf. So is that something that happened at practice yesterday? Remember a couple of weeks ago, Ed Oliver injured his hamstring at practice, and he did miss 2 weeks. So it's something I'll ask Sean McDermott about when he joins me at 10:45 a.m. or so on the Extra Point Show. You know, the Ray Davis, did something happen at practice, and how does that look for him? Otherwise, and on top of all that, guys, Josh Allen no longer even wearing the glove on the left hand.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's another, you know, piece of information and good news. I've said it a couple times over the last 24 hours, and I'll say it again. Like, not a great week for the "this team is always injured, fire the training staff" crowd, right? I mean, like, it's just not true. Like, this is the ebbs and flows of injury reports. Sometimes you're going to have more people. Sometimes you're going to have less people. There's nothing you can do about getting hurt playing professional football sometimes. It just happens. But, you know, you can maintain and manage those injuries as best you can. You can, you know, do what you can to make sure those people don't get re-injured by, you know, however the timeline is. And, you know, I think right now the Bills are in a pretty good spot heading into this week against the Tennessee Titans, obviously.
Shakir missed a game, then came back on a limited snap count, Sal. Any indication that might be the case again?
It's a good question. I'm even looking. He was a full participant the last 2 days. Even remember last week when he played, he was limited all week.
Yep.
And then he was limited in the game.
And
obviously,
we didn't even know until it seemed like a game time. He walked on the field. We were waiting to find out if he'd be active, and he was. So You would think that might mean closer
to... Actually, I should even change that. He didn't practice twice, and then he was limited. Remember that?
Right.
He was limited on the final day. So, you know, Jeremy, it's a good question. You know, even now with the addition of Amari Cooper, right? But how many plays does Amari Cooper get? And does and with only five receivers, I'm really wondering what they do with the receiver spot. Do they elevate someone? Because I don't think you can have Amari Cooper on the field for 70% of the snaps, right? So that leaves you four. And then what about Khalil's injury? Are you still coming back from that a little bit? So the wide receiver spot might be something to monitor this weekend, you know, for elevations and things like that.
Is Kincaid's injury worth watching at all? He was in non-contact, right? I also don't know when that happened. It must have happened in the Jet game.
Yeah, so Joe, there was a play. Your seats, Joe, were you on the Bills side or the Jets side?
We were on the Bills side.
Okay, so it was away from you. He was on the Jet sideline going left to right. The Bills were going left to right, and he caught a pass. And this is when I think it happened. I can't be for certain. This is what, because I noticed it during the game. When he got tackled after catching a pass out on that side, he got up, and I thought he just like put his hand over like on his shoulder area, just kind of working it out. You know what I mean? Like, I just noticed it. It's just my job to kind of see things like that. And then I watched him. He never went to the trainer. So I'm just wondering if maybe something happened there. But I was at practice yesterday. Yes, he was in the red non-contact. Yes, I know that, you know, he's on the injury report. And then just checking on this, there's so many. He was listed as limited the last 2 days. I don't think there's anything, you know, that I'd be personally concerned with there. I also say, Sean McDermott on Tuesday on a Zoom call, after the game, we asked him about injuries, and he said nothing of significance, just some bumps and bruises with guys.
Okay. Gotcha.
Sal Capaccio joining on the Western Hotline. If you want to give us a call, you can, 803-0550. It is a Football Friday here on WGR, brought to you by Salino Law, Car Crash, Call Salino, and by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your game day the Crosby's way. Sal, we also got, so the process of a trade, you know, you hear from the coach and the GM and then the player that got traded. How about the players who now have a new teammate? There seems to be, I saw Matt Bovee tweet out a piece, you know, you do the podcast with him, it's always game day in Buffalo, about excitement, that there are a number of players. This is a name in the league. I saw Taron Johnson talk about Cooper, like, this is a great player. Khalil Shakir, excited to work with him. The sense of excitement with the Bills on getting a new teammate.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that the main thing that I've taken away is this guy is very well known to be a really good teammate, hard worker, quiet guy, locker room guy, you know, and it doesn't mean that, you know, that's not a shot at anybody else, right? I think that people have compared him, you know, kind of the opposite of Stephon Diggs with the personality wise. And I get that. Michael Irvin went on TV a few days ago and literally said he's the opposite of Stephon Diggs personality wise. I mean, it takes all kinds. It doesn't mean that anybody's a bad teammate or, you know, and Stephon was a good teammate, but he's totally a different personality. And this is just a guy, I think that the word on him is he's just going to come in here and do his job. And he's going to, no, you're not going to hear much from him. He's just going to show up, work hard, do his job. He's very kind of quiet and unassuming. And I got that, guys. I got that by just talking to him a little bit and being around him and talking with other players. You know, Connor McGovern played with him in Dallas, and he said the same thing. He's like, yeah, he just fits right in. He's just a super, super good guy, hard worker. You wouldn't even know he's there half the time. So I think that's a big part of it. And then you look at the numbers, right? I mean, he has a name in this league. He has a name for a guy that's put in a lot of work. He's top 10 in active receiving yards, top 10 in active receptions. He's got 7 1,000-yard seasons to his credit. Typically, when a wide receiver has those numbers, you know, I think you think of him a little differently. You think of Amari Cooper, but I think because of his unassuming personality, he hasn't had those same maybe accolades. But also, there hasn't been a lot of winning in his career, right? He was with the Raiders to start his career, got traded to the Cowboys. They did a little winning, not enough, obviously, but it is the Cowboys. And then he went to the Browns. I think that's part of it as well. He just hasn't been on organizations that have really elevated his profile.
He also hasn't played with a quarterback to this caliber, right, Sal? Like, Prescott is good, very good even. So that gets you kind of close. But otherwise, like, you look at his Raiders career, Carr, I guess, is okay. But he hasn't – we've yet to see him with an elite quarterback is all I mean to say. And there was a lot of evidence with John Browns and Beasley's and a lot of guys until maybe this year a little bit that you play with Josh Allen and you're probably going to see career highs.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that would depend on what you think about Dak when he played with him and, you know, how you view him. But so I don't, you know, I don't put him in the same category as Josh. But Dak's had some really nice years. And you go back to the years that Amari Cooper was, you know, in Dallas with Dak. I'm just taking a look here. Amari Cooper going back, you know, Dak in those years. Dak threw for, you know, 4,900 yards, 4,400 yards, 30 touchdowns. He's had some nice years. So this is certainly, I would say, overall the best quarterback he's played with. But Dak had some really good years when Amari Cooper was throwing to him. So you're right, Joe. I mean, obviously we've, you know, seen in the past, you know, what a difference a quarterback can make. And look what, you know, look at Devontae Adams going from Rodgers to where he went. Now he's going back to Rodgers, and that's a big talk with him as well, you know, being reunited with the kind of quarterback like this. So, yeah, for sure. This is a guy that, you know, I'm excited to see how he fits into the offense, but I think that from a standpoint of the team, the locker room, the players, the guys in the league, you know, he's a 10-year veteran. You know, you don't find many guys that have been in the league 10 years. And just, you know, it's tough to survive in this league for that long. So there's a lot of guys that know of him from before the time he came in the league. I mean, heck, I just told you, I was at an event with Stevie last night, and we were talking how, like, Stevie was still playing when Amari Cooper came in the league. So, you know, he's been in the league. He's put in some work.
How much do you expect him to impact or affect the Bills' passing offense in general? Like, how much it could change the offense? They are running the ball more than they ever have been. They're still, you know, top half of the league in passing, but it's still down. But not that that's a stunner. Like, we thought that that might be likely going into the year, that they'd be around, like, 11th or 12th in the neutral pass stuff. But also, like, Allen's numbers, Sal, like, I don't want to get hung up on it too much because he doesn't have a pick, and there have been a couple bad games, but there are a couple great games too, but it is just kind of weird to look at his stats and see 193 yards per game. I mean, that is, like, rookie Josh Allen stuff. And, again, he's not playing as bad as a rookie Josh Allen was, but how much do you expect Cooper to come in and maybe just the offense in general to see more passing volume? Because I can't believe that we're going to end the season and Allen is still going to be under 200 yards per game.
That'd be amazing, right? I mean, yet here he is still being talked about as an MVP candidate with those numbers because of the touchdown to interception ratio and the record of the team. You know, the running touchdowns, which matter and factor in there. I just can't see some major shift in philosophy on the offense. I think that this is probably more of a situation where now when you need to turn to a bigger player, you feel more confident maybe, you know, throwing the ball in certain situations than you are running. I think going into the game, though, going into a week-to-week situation, I don't know if we're going to see this huge change in philosophy of, hey, we're going to start, you know, throwing the ball a lot more. I think this team still wants to run the ball a lot. I think they feel very good about the backs they have. They feel very good about how they can run the ball. Look what they did last week against the Jets. And obviously, they can throw the ball, but don't want to be a team that has to rely on throwing the ball. So I guess that's the way I'd say it, Joe, which is, until I see it, I'd be surprised if they feel that, okay, we can now rely on passing the ball versus running. But I think they feel a lot more comfortable in certain situations saying, okay, we have the guys that if we need to play, you know, we can make it here in the passing game with this group of wide receivers, adding Amari Cooper in the mix.
803-0550, our number 1-888-550-2550 to join us. Brandon Bean talked about other positions being available. I saw Jordan Schultz on with Colin Cowherd talk about linebacker and safety as two potential answers here. Maybe Bills fans reached out to you about Jamal Adams because he was just released by the Titans.
No thank you.
No thank you, unless you're just getting intel on the Titans for this week. But, you know, Sal, the Cooper move is such a small one from a salary cap standpoint that, you know, we can spend the next couple of weeks, and the Bills can, of course, still evaluating what they have and adding to it if necessary.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, Bean said that those conversations are always ongoing. They're always looking. Yeah, he had the example of a team telling him they had three guys available if they want to circle back and they're interested. So, hey, you know, there's teams out there saying, we're sellers. Let us know. The next couple of weeks might even more determine that. You still have, what, three more games to get through before, you know, the trade deadline here. And then you say, okay, where are we? Injuries are going to factor into that. Where are you with injury situation? That's what happened last year with Tre'Davious White. And then you trade for Rasul Douglas. Tre'Davious White got hurt, you know, in week, what, 5 against Miami. And, you know, a couple weeks later, they trade for Rasul Douglas. You have to see where all these things stand with the roster. I think linebacker and safety, those two positions being mentioned to me are very interesting or being thrown out there. I don't know how accurate that is. I guess it could be, but I don't know. They're already scratching linebackers as healthy scratches because they have a lot of guys there. They have Terrell Bernard. What are they looking at? Are somebody going to say they're going to a Will linebacker? We have Matt Milano who might be coming back, right? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. And then at safety, you could understand that given what's happened here at safety. But I would tell you, first of all, let me say two things. First of all, I don't think the safety position's killed him. There's been times where you say, oh my God, like that was a play that somebody should have made. But the other, and then obviously the Cole Bishop, you know, play. But that hasn't happened a ton this year. But the other thing is, you have another safety that's out there named Micah Hyde, who you don't have to trade for if you're really interested in bringing someone in that you trust and wants to play football. So I look at those positions, I see that report, and I think that's very curious to me.
Well, the thing I would say about the safeties, and I'll ask you about this too, is of all the positions, they might be a little more likely to say it's going to take some time. Would that be at the top of the list? I mean, they've got a lot of turnover at that position, obviously, whether it's Cole Bishop that's a rookie. I mean, Mike Edwards is a non-factor as a new player on the team that they sign in free agency. But it just seems to me Rapp's game from Monday night is super encouraging to me. Like, that was his best game as a Bill, and he's been here for a year plus. So I wonder if the Bills and McDermott and Bobby Babbage wouldn't look at it as, listen, we know we need work there maybe, but that's a position that might take a little bit of time to kind of gel.
Yeah, Rapp's game is kind of another, I don't know, you want to call it a narrative buster or theory buster or something like that about how you don't have to, like, no, just throw these guys in. Cole Bishop, I can't believe. When Cole Bishop was drafted and I suggested that, you know, he's really not going to play safety right away, and I got just torched by so many Bills fans telling me how terrible of a draft pick that must be if he can't get on the field as a second-round pick. And I'm like, listen, it takes time at that position. Have you not seen the fact that they've had two guys for seven straight years? Like, that's just not the case. And then sure enough, look what happens when he goes in. Like, there's communication issues. He gives up a long play. I like Cole Bishop. He's going to be fine. He's going to be a good player. But, Jeremy, your point is right. And then here's Taylor Rapp, who was just completely, you know, just the butt of jokes from Bills fans, essentially, you know, early in the season. I can't believe this guy's not good enough. And he's out here, you know, making plays and showing that this is why. This is why having experience in the system matters. This is why, you know, veterans and playing these guys over the younger players matters sometimes to the coaching staff. It's not always a perfect decision. It's not always the right decision. But it matters. And the one here that you just touched on that I think is the crux of this particular position is Mike Edwards giving you nothing. I just can't figure out that part of it, right? Which is they signed Mike Edwards, and even I said, hey, I think because he played in similar systems, he'll be able to probably, you know, do a little bit more, a little bit quicker. And then Sean McDermott had said at one point in the preseason, going into week one, somewhere around there, they signed Mike Edwards thinking he'd be a starter. Well, guys, he's a healthy scratch sometimes. He can't even get on the field. So I think because of that, and then you see that when Bishop comes in the game and a couple of communication issues, it gets you to, okay, where really are we here? And maybe we need some reinforcements. I'd also add this in. Saying all that, think about everything we just said and I just said. Are you trading from someone from another position, from another outside system for that position here and bringing him in? The answer at safety might be on your own roster. It might be Lewis Cine. It might be Kareem Jackson. It might be Micah Hyde sitting on his couch, wherever he is.
I was trying to think of, like, is there a guy out there, was this 2 years ago, Sal, where it was like a low-level trade, where they traded for Dean Marlowe, who had experience in their system, but I don't know if there's a safety out there that's obvious other than, like, Jordan Poyer, but, I mean, the in division makes that a little tougher. So maybe that could work, but again, I don't know if there's an obvious name here that would fit for what I'm talking about.
It's a good question. I don't think so, except for Micah Hyde.
I've actually thought Sal the most when Bean talked about trades the other day and whenever the deadline comes up, how they still have money. Because otherwise, like, I don't really know where I'd turn my attention to that makes the most sense on their roster, even if it was a smaller trade, other than kicker. Because the Bills do add a kicker yesterday, and it's stark, like, hey, he's got the same numbers that Tyler Bass has while Bass is struggling. And you've made this point. Like, it's just so hard to get a guy off the street that's going to be an upgrade from what they have in Tyler Bass. I mean, the one way to do that would be the trade market. You do see trades for kickers, like for seventh-round picks a few times a year. So maybe that would be the position that I'm thinking about the most.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? I mean, they do have another kicker on the roster now. And they signed him yesterday. Lucas, I want to say his name right again.
Haversack.
Yeah. And he comes in. He's wearing number 30, by the way.
All right. Yeah. You don't like that?
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
That's a number. Is that Bakari Rambo? Who's 30?
That's Dane Jackson.
Dane Jackson. Yeah. Rambo might have been 31.
Yeah, it's a really tough situation. I mean, you just really would hope that Tyler Baskett turned around because, again, if all of a sudden the new kicker trots out there to kick some 45-yard field goal, are you feeling any better than you do about Tyler Bass? I don't know. Maybe because you just don't have any confidence in Bass right now, but I wouldn't necessarily have any confidence in somebody new that's been on the street that hasn't had a job and just signed. So it's a tough one. It's a good position, Joe, to think about. Yeah, I'll give you one more position. You ready? Wide receiver. Do you think they could add another one? I mean, honestly, I'm not even kidding. Like, could they go out and even add somebody else to the position?
Sure, it's possible.
How big a name are we talking? Yeah. Like Hopkins, or I mean, lower than that?
I don't know. I don't know. It's a good question. Speaking of the podcast, we debated this the other day, and Matt brought it up, and I said it's a great point because you got Amari Cooper now. No more MVS. The only issue I would have is we know. Even though the fans and media may say they shouldn't, we know they really like Mac Hollins for the role he's playing. Like, where else would you kind of trim if you brought somebody in? It's not, I guess you could say Curtis Samuel, but I mean, they're paying him a lot of money. They have an investment there.
Right.
But you think about the group they have, is there room to add even another person then to make it even better after the Amari Cooper deal?
Sal, before we go, back to the kicker.
Yeah.
Did they have the numbers? Would they ever elevate him and have two kickers dressed for a game? I mean, because it's the kind of thing where if you decide to sit Bass and dress Lucas Haversick, you've now given that game to a guy that you don't. I feel like it is delicate how you do handle that.
100% agree, Jeremy. I don't know if you can do it. You can, yes. Obviously, you know, operationally you could do it, right? You could elevate a kicker, have two kickers for the game. What are their roles, though? Like, why would you do that? Are you just doing it because you're going to pick and choose who's kicking a field goal?
You'd make Bass inactive if you did that, I think, right? You would elevate Haversick and you would make Bass inactive.
I wonder if you don't go, like, I'm thinking about any other spot. Like, think of it like a receiver where Shakir is a game time. Maybe he can go. I'm going to dress another one just to be prepared in case. And I don't know, Sal. Like, you might look at any opponent, and the Bills are up by 14 in the fourth quarter. Let's give Haversick a kick here, because I want to see him kick in game conditions. You know, simulating all that at the stadium. It seems to me like a position that's really hard to make a change at, or really hard to gamble with, because the game could come down to it. Maybe you don't feel that way against a home opponent where you're a big favorite, and you might get some free reps in there.
So I would say, Jeremy, that would be your scenario could probably only happen in a week like this where it appears that they're really healthy.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because those elevations and the roster management is really important. Those roster spots are really important. If let's say somebody on the injury report this week. So Ray Davis pops up with the calf this week, right? Let's just say today, and I don't know. Let's just say today McDermott says, yeah, he tweaks something, he's going to be questionable. Well, now you probably have to use a spot maybe on Frank Gore Jr. Let's say it's at Oliver. You might have to use a spot on Elianku or Kingsley Jonathan. That's one of your elevations. Can you really afford to just elevate, right, to have a luxury? However, if you're super healthy, you might be able to do that. That's right. You could do something like that. And then you think about when you give that person a rep to put in there. I think probably more likely would be what Joe said, which is if you're going to do it, then you're probably making Tyler Bass inactive. But hey, if you're super healthy, you're at home, you want to see something, I mean, maybe that's the time to do it, and then you give him a kick or two as the game goes on, depending on game flow and score.
Yeah. Also very possible Bass just, you know, turns it around and Haversick is gone in a couple of weeks, because this week it's home. Next week it's Seattle, which seems like a pretty big ask for any kicker on a road environment like that. All right, Sal, thanks very much.
All right, guys, you got it.
McDermott today on Extra Point Show.
Yep. 10:45 is the tentative time for Sean McDermott today. So obviously, could be a little bit before, a little bit after, but you know, we'll get the injury report and more so from him.
Very good. Thanks, Sal.
You got it.
Football Friday brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash, call Salino, and by Crosby's Pizza and Sub. Start your game day the Crosby's way. Give us a call, 803-0550 if you want. Paul Hamilton checks in as the Sabres head off to Chicago next to finish this three-game road trip, which has them with 1 point out of a potential four as they lost in Columbus last night. We'll get to Paul. We'll get to Chris Brown in about an hour as well as Football Friday continues on WGR.
It's Paul Hamilton.
I just love this reggae music. It's my favorite of all time. I wish they would just play this on autopilot, never turn it off. It's just so great. I love it so much.
He keeps the people coming back for more.
Super excited, and I might just add this. I've missed Paul Hamilton, and that's the reason I'm back.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
All right. There you go, Paul. You got a brand new fancy open. Get to the Firth Moments of the Game, brought to you by Firth Jewelers. For the moments of life, go forth to Firth.
Comes right back in that direction. Near wall for Power. He'll send it up top. Darlene with a shot. There's a rebound. Power scores! Owen Power jumps on the loose puck, and back and forth we go here in Columbus. The Sabres back within one with 25 seconds to go in the second period. 4-3 Blue Jackets.
The Blue Jackets would immediately score to start the third period. Paul joins us. His appearance brought to you by Relax. On to Relax. We got this. Hey, Paul. Paul, what do you even say about this team right now?
I don't know. They work hard in the second period. They get themselves back into the hockey game. And then, as you said, 15 seconds into the third period, the air goes out because they give up another goal. And that's that. And it just seems like they can either defend well and play good defense and not score goals, or they can score goals and be horrendous everywhere else on the ice. They just can't seem to put the whole package together except for the Florida game. So, here we go again. I mean, it's just a constant merry-go-round, fire coaches, fire GMs, revamp the team. It's all been done multiple times, but nothing seems to change whatsoever. I mean, Terry Pegula thought, hey, just bring Lindy Ruff back and everything will be great. Maybe it will be. It's only six games in. Maybe it will be. But you're falling into a hole again in the beginning of the season like you've done in so many years before, and then you're going to have to leapfrog most of the conference to try to get into the playoffs and put yourself in it by the holidays in an impossible task. So, I mean, they're not there yet, but that's where they're on their way to, which is what they've done for how many years?
Paul, Alex Tuch said that they lacked urgency, and part of me wonders if that's you have to say something after a game versus is that real? Is that something they notice? Because, you know, like to hear that in this part of the season, it's early in the season, but man, like, it's a game in Columbus. You lost the night before. You need wins. You need to stack some wins after getting into a hole. And the urgency point is a really tough one to take.
Well, it's true. I mean, their first shot attempt was 10 minutes into the first period. Shot attempt. It didn't make the net. Got blocked. Then a couple minutes later, they finally got their first shot. Well, that's not real urgency to me. If you don't even get a shot attempt, I don't care how tired you are, you should at least get a shot attempt. And they seem not to be tired in the second period. I mean, the Thompson line spent the whole period in the offensive zone. They scored three goals. They cut the lead to one. You know, all you got to do is make up one goal in the third period, and you're on your way to at least a point. And you give up a goal 15 seconds in. And just they're saying the same things they said last year because it's the same team. It's just a different coaching staff, but, you know, it's going to get to the point where you're going to start to wonder, did they wrap up the wrong core? Is this core? I mean, I kept saying it last year, not that By the end of the year, I didn't think they needed to change it, coach. But it's always coach's fault. It's never the player's fault. And, well, you change coaches, and pretty soon you're going to play bad enough, you're going to change general managers. And the same players are here, and guess what? You're stuck because of their contracts. You've signed them to the long-term deals. Their contracts are untradeable. So if you did lock up the wrong core, you are now stuck for the next 5 to 7 years.
Ooh, and that immediately, who comes to mind for that, Paul, right now amongst players who are struggling and are under contract for a long time? I mean, Paul, I don't know what has happened to Dylan Cousins in the last 12 months, but he has not looked like the same player for a long time. And should I throw Samuelson into this? Because I feel like I'm seeing three plays a night, Paul, from him that are just completely head-scratching.
You're not wrong, but you're missing the one that's the Rasmus Dahlin is by far the worst I've ever seen him play in his career. He is just awful. And I don't know if he's still struggling from the preseason injury. That would be my guess. But he can't be awful. Matter of fact, for them to be a championship team, he can't be, well, he's very good. He has to be the elite player they thought they were drafting when they drafted him. He's never been that. And if they want to be a championship team, he must be that. I mean, Colorado had McCarr, Tampa Bay had Hedman. You know, you need that linchpin if you're going to be a championship team, and right now he's nowhere. I mean, that turnover, he just let two guys – he's in the defensive zone, and he tries to go through two guys, and of course they stripped him of the puck, and it was in the net in seconds. Your captain and your guy who should be an elite player but is not cannot be making mistakes like that.
Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline. Goaltending has also kind of left them out here a couple games.
Yeah, they didn't get saves in either game. That hadn't been a problem until then. I thought both goaltenders had played well up to that point. But if you're going to be playing poorly and need to be held into a game, you can't have goaltending like we've seen in the last two games either. That hasn't helped, especially, you know, when you're in Pittsburgh and you score five on five goals and outscore them 5-2, 5-on-5. You know, yeah, they didn't play real well at times, but they did play well at times, and they couldn't get a save. And same thing last night. They couldn't get a save. You know, they got back 4-3. Now, the goal in the third period wasn't Levi's fault. It was tipped. But still, there were other goals that you need a big save, and you just didn't get it in either game.
Paul Hamilton. Next up, Chicago, Paul, and then a home stretch. So, I mean, if you get Chicago, you get 3 out of 6, and that kind of avoids disaster. I mean, 3 out of 6 points is not going to be good enough to get you back in a race, but whatever. It's kind of like treading water. At this point, I mean, they need it. They come out of this road trip with 1 point. I mean, you know how the fans feel about this, and this might be new to Lindy, but they're going to lose so many people so quickly.
Yeah, good luck in the next home game if you come back with 1 point. I don't care if Lindy Ruff's here or not, but and that's the thing. I mean, to play 3 winnable games and leave with 1 point, I mean, the old adage is, you know, be 500 on the road and play well at home, and you should be fine. Well, you know, this 500 wouldn't feel like that. This 500 would feel like, well, you went and played those 3 teams and you only came back 500? But that's the best they can do right now. And that wouldn't be a disaster to be 500. Yeah, getting 1 point would be a disaster. But I want to keep stressing, again, we're only 6 games in, but you've lost 5 out of 6 games to start the year when, you know, we have players saying they took last year personally and Lindy Ruff saying that you have to get off to a fast start and Kevin Adams saying you have to get off to a fast start because that's really what's killed him in some of these non-playoff years. Is they don't kick it in until after the holidays. And then there have been seasons when they've been one of the best teams after the holidays. Well, but you know what? October and November count in the standings, as does March and April. And if you are just nowhere in October and November, you've put yourself too far behind the eight ball. It doesn't matter what you do after January 1st.
Paul Hamilton, his appearance brought to you by Relax, Honda. Relax. We got this. Thanks, Paul.
No problem. Take care, guys.
Sabres fall in Columbus. Chicago next.
Just the saddest. This team is the saddest thing ever. It's going to be 14 years. It's the most incredible. It might be the most incredible thing that's ever happened in Buffalo sports. I don't even know.
This bad this long? And
what
only,
else?
Only close once.
What else in this city has happened in sports that has never happened anywhere else ever? Because this has never happened in hockey. That sport is parody. No one has ever done this. Maybe making four straight Super Bowls and not winning them. That's the other thing. But this is something that has never happened anywhere else for this amount of time.
I thought of a question to ask, which isn't exactly a fair question, but I thought of it, which is, what sounds more ridiculous right now? Them having a 14-year playoff drought or them making it once? Like, what sounds more ridiculous? Envision them being good enough to make it.
Yeah.
Like, it's not been a good start. Darlene being lost for, you know, Paul. So we're on Darlene, Cousins, Samuelson, Quinn.
Quinn at least isn't under contract for 7 years yet. I'm not worried. I think he'll... Did you see the thing on Quinn yesterday that was being pointed out? NHL Edge has their player tracking data. The thing that's happened to Quinn is he has gone from an above-average skater to he's one of the worst skaters in the NHL right now. I saw it was... their one number is 20-mile-per-hour bursts per hour you're on the ice. So for every hour you're on the ice, how many times do you hit 20 miles per hour? 2 years ago, for Quinn, it was just under 5 times for every hour, mm-hmm. and right now it's like 1.2.
Hmm.
Like, he's never moving anymore, and I don't know why that's happening. I could guess it's in a torn Achilles or whatever he had last year, but he can't skate.
Do you have any fears about the young players deciding, yeah, I don't really want to be a part of this? Like, the Sabres love their guys that want to be here.
I have fear of any single person in that locker room. It would be, to me, it wouldn't be natural. It wouldn't be human if someone in that locker room didn't have the thought once in a while, I might want to get the hell out of here.
Right, but like a guy like Paterka.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not been around and suffering for 14 years. It's like, I'm playing hockey, I'm scoring goals, I'm in the NHL. So I don't know that his frustration would boil over. Like Eichel, Reinhardt, those guys.
Once you get to year 7.
Yeah, they went through a lot of it. And some of these other Sabres, I mean, they locked them in, so you kind of can't.
Yeah.
And then again, you could. Ugh. All right, hey, Football Friday. Chris Brown joins us coming up at 8:30. Stevie Johnson will be in studio. We'll talk to him about a new project he's got going on, a new children's book coming out, and about the Amari Cooper trade. 803-0550, 1-888-552-550. Jeremy and Joe on Football Friday on WGR. I have a great trivia question off last night's game. Great.
From last night's game?
It
last night's game was horrible.
Yeah, it was.
Watch.
The Saints, by the way, went from, the Saints, to like, all right, never mind. Forget them. Like, then again, they were down their starting quarterback and two best receivers.
Right.
Anyway.
And linemen, too, on top of it. So
yep.
They've lost 5 in a row, though.
DeMeco Ryan says that Jordan Love is the best quarterback we'll see this season.
Wow.
The Texans played the Bills.
Some Texans disrespect play there.
Yeah, bulletin board material. Too bad it's after the fact. Do you have a bulletin board for later in the year? Like, the Bills should have one.
Like, you should be stacking it as you go. Yeah.
Yeah, just...
Every team should now have that quote on their bulletin board.
In case you meet the Texans again, pull that... Oh, wait, we got the Texans bulletin board.
Yeah.
Bills-Texans playoffs. What did they say? DeMeco Ryan said that Jordan Love's the best quarterback they'll face this year. Can you believe that? The Texans also play the Lions, the Jets, the Cowboys. They play the Bills. They play Mahomes. They play Will Levis. No, sorry. They play Lamar. Wow.
Jordan Love.
803-0550. I think I'll start next segment with this trivia question because it's so good.
All right.
Sean Payton last night beating the Saints brings us to a great trivia question. Your calls on Bills-Titans as well on a Football Friday on WGR.